So today, you know, that's just really like what we're going to dig into. And that might be the longest intro like soapbox ever. But we're really going to just dig into like why, right? And it's not your fault. Like that's the real inside tip here is that your failures with your personal finance, your failures to save, your failures with your budgeting, your failures to like rein in your stupid wasteful spending, it's not your fault. The problem is with traditional budgeting and budgeting apps and the way they work and the way that they don't work, more importantly. Welcome to Service and Wealth, the podcast dedicated to helping military personnel master their finances and achieve financial freedom. Our mission is to guide you through the ins and outs of planning, saving, and investing, and most importantly, how to balance saving so you can enjoy life now and retire with confidence. Welcome back to the show. It's your host, Ted Ehlert, here on the Service and Wealth Podcast. We're back with episode 34. That's right. We're now officially over a third of the way to the century mark, and we're just going to keep chugging along. So thanks to everybody who's been listening and downloading and following the show. And I really hope that you're doing it because you find value in the content. And, you know, as we've said many, many times, like, that's the purpose. We want to try to help our military community, active duty, reserve, guard, retired, all the veterans out there, you know, not just retirees, but, you know, even somebody who's maybe they make it, you know, like 12 or 15 months in uniform and they get hurt and they get medically discharged, right? Like you're still part of the community. And so anybody out there who's in uniform or has ever worn it is part of the family. And that's why we're here, is to improve financial education for people in the military. You know, last week's episode, we talked about how essentially, you know, military families and active duty service members are in, you know, sort of like a collective financial crisis. You know, 3 out of 4 report not being able to cover the cost of housing, not being able to make ends meet without a second source of income or a, you know, full-time job for their partner. And you know, that turns into really complicated life choices. And if you're just living paycheck to paycheck, then that's generally, you know, kind of the reality. And, you know, I haven't looked up any headlines now for, you know, I guess probably been about like 18 months since I first started researching how much of a crisis, how deep the crisis is for personal finances in America. And, you know, back in mid to late 2023, 62% of Americans were living paycheck to paycheck, meaning that they had less savings than their monthly bills. And if they were out of work, they wouldn't be able to cover those bills because they didn't have enough savings. And, you know, the average American household has less than $8,000 of liquid cash savings, has about $10,000 in credit card or what's called, you know, revolving debt plus, and that, you know, that doesn't even count their auto loans. Cause for some reason we try to treat those separately, like they're somehow not as bad as having a credit card debt. But on top of it, you know, the average American has $17,000 that they owe on an auto loan, right? So you literally are looking at, in America, at least 3 out of 5 people have 3 times as much debt as they have savings, and they're living paycheck to paycheck. And in the military, it's even worse. We know it's at least 3 out of 4. It's probably more like 80-85%, right? Like if you look at your squad, you look around, like there's probably only 1 or maybe 2 of you who are not like in some sort of financial crisis. And, you know, we talked about last week was a little bit of sort of like, not to be too crass, but like, you know, if you're listening to the show, you're part of the military community, like, you know, that Marines and sailors have, and all of us, like last week was kind of like pull your head out of your ass, right? Like one statistic that we found from this survey of military families for 2024, right? A huge survey, tens of thousands of military families surveyed. 3 out of 4 said that they can't get by without a second form of income or having their, and these were married military respondents. You know, they said 3 out of 4 of us can't make our ends meet without a second full-time job. And 3 out of 4, the same percentage, said, oh, I don't really want my spouse to work. It's too hard. Like, we're PCSing every 2 or 3 years, you know? And we just try to, like, come out and say, look, that's stupid. Like, you have to look in the mirror and you know, say it to yourself and sound how dumb it sounds when you say, I'm in financial crisis, I'm stressing out, I can't make ends meet, but I'm unwilling to do the things that I know will fix it, right? And I don't know, I guess you can't fix everything or you can't help everything, but there's really like the mindset that's got to come first. And if that's your mindset, that we're spending too much on housing, the BAH isn't enough, but you're unwilling to move into a smaller place or a slightly less nice place, especially if you're renting, right? Like, you don't need the shiny condo that you're renting and paying too much for because you can see a sliver of the ocean in San Diego. Like, just go live inland, right? And save $1,000 a month. Or if your mindset is so old school that you think, you know, instead of having your partner go back to work who's got a nursing degree or a teaching degree or some other sort of qualification or skill set, you know, maybe like ASE mechanics, like where they could make $40,000, because if you do that, then you're going to have to spend $15,000 on childcare. You're still net, you're losing $25,000, right? And I understand money's not all of it, but like money is the start of it, you know, and that's really what we talk about here at the Military Wealth Coach, is like money is just a way to measure the time that you give up every day to go do something that you wouldn't be doing if you weren't getting paid for it. You know, we all get really sarcastic and we're like, oh man, all this in a paycheck? Man, how lucky am I, right? But we don't really mean that, you know? It's like an inside joke. You're out there sleeping on the ground, getting bit by spiders, getting rained on, got blisters on your feet, smell like things that some people were never meant to smell, you know, like, and you're like, oh, all this in a paycheck? Well, of course, right? You wouldn't be doing it with fur if you weren't getting paid. But why are you doing it then? It's not because you want to like get $3,628 a month for working 80 hours a week. No, it's because it's enabling you to do something that's important to you, that's going to help you get closer to these bigger life goals that you have for yourself, for your family, for your future. And the money is just a way that measures how much time and energy you're giving up right now in order to buy back your freedom later, right? And it's one of those things that, you know, I think a lot of the online, you know, communities and cliches have kind of like hijacked financial independence or financial freedom into this thing that by combining it into a quirky acronym, FIRE, like financially independent, retire early, they've equated reaching some amount of savings with being financially independent and allowing you to retire early, like in your 40s or your 50s, right? And really, financial independence is retirement, right? Most of us are forced into financial independence at a lower income level when we hit 75, right? There's like a mandatory retirement age in a lot of cases. You're told you got to stop working. Or maybe we reach quote-unquote retirement when we're 62 or 65 or 67 because we know that we're going to start getting Social Security checks from the government. We know that we can start withdrawing cash from our individual retirement accounts or our 401ks or our thrift savings plans. But it's going to be at a lower income. You know, when you're 60, maybe you're making, and this is future you at 60, like not 60 today, but future you in like 30 years or whatever, you're making $300,000 a year. And you're like, well, I can retire. I'm going to have to do it on like $150,000. I'm going to have to cut my lifestyle in half. And that's, you know, that those are all forms of financial independence. Just because you're financially independent doesn't mean you stop working, right? You can be financially independent by having $5 million in the bank by age 50 and still work, right? They're not the same things. And so when we talk about like financial independence or financial freedom, we're just talking about you have enough money to buy back your time and do what you want. And that can be, if you still want to work, go work, right? Like we've all seen like that reserve E5 who's like 80, or like that chief warrant officer who's like 72, or like the, you know, the generals who are like 150 years old. Like, you know, I don't know why you're still in this organization when you're that old. Like it's too hard, you know, both physically and the stupidity you got to deal with. But if you have the financial independence to make a free choice about what you're doing with your life, if that's what you really want, go do it. If you want to quit and just stay at home and like play Fortnite and eat pizza and like get fat, like do it. Who cares? If you want to travel the world, go do it. It's all about those end states, right? And the problem is that, you know, when we don't have a control over our finances today and we're living paycheck to paycheck, we're living outside of our means, those things just stay as dreams. We never, ever will get to realize them. They'll always just be this thing that motivates us, but we never actually worked for, right? And that's what's really insane. I think a great parallel is to think about the fitness test that we take in the military. Now, I got to always be like a little bit cheeky when it comes talking fitness tests and like the different branches, right? Because like, I remember going, when I was going to like a joint school and my classmates were like, there were like two Army guys and like three Air Force guys. And then I was like the only Marine. We didn't have any, you know, sailors in there, but it was that time of year. It was like coming up on the end of the year, and it was that time of year to go do fitness tests. And, you know, like I was like, oh, hey, I'm going to be in late on Friday, because we have our fitness test, and it's just going to go a little bit long. I'm going to be like 30 minutes late. Right. They're like, oh, okay, that's fine. Hey, what do you do again? It's like, oh, well, you know, got to run 3 miles in 18 minutes. Got to do, at the time, it was 20 pull-ups, you know, it's higher now. And like 130 crunches in under 2 minutes. And they're like, oh, what? Oh my gosh, that sounds terrible. I was like, oh, what do you do? Because, you know, this is like my first, you know, foray into like the joint world and meeting people in the Air Force and other services. And they're like, oh, no, we just got to go. We're going to go to the gym after work, the air conditioned gym on base. And we got to, on the treadmill, we got to do 1.5 miles in like 15 minutes. I was like, what? How many pull-ups do you have to do? Like, oh, we don't do pull-ups. Well, what else do you do? We got to do like 20 sit-ups in a minute. I'm like, what is going on? Right. Anyway, enough ragging on the Air Force, right? Because there are also some super fit Air Force folks out there, which makes sense, right? Because you've got like 6 hours a day to go to the gym. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm stopping. The point is, whether you have to do, you know, 20 sit-ups, 55 push-ups in a minute, or 23 pull-ups in a minute, you will never get there if you don't actually practice it, if you don't actually exercise and work out. And you're never going to practice and work out if you don't have a schedule and a plan and routine. And usually it's pretty easy to do. You're like, okay, I'm going to go to the gym 3 days a week. Each day I'm at the gym, I'm going to finish my workout with, you know, descending sets of pull-ups or push-up pyramid, or, you know, 3 days a week, you know, 2 days during the week, and then once on the weekend, I'm going to do my cardio, and I make sure I'm always fit. And you get in that routine, and you just go, and you start seeing other people at the gym, or you see other people out there at the track. You know, you have friends at your unit who, like, you also maybe work out with, and, like, you hold each other accountable, you motivate each other. It becomes, it becomes rewarding to like do your workouts, get better, get stronger, get faster, get better scores, become more competitive for promotion. It's all tied to these goals and that you have, the daily habits. And on the flip side, well, or even on the same side, right? If you don't go to the gym, what do you feel? You feel guilty. You feel bad. Like you don't want to see that your gym buddy later that day and have to tell her like, I just slept in. I was feeling lazy, right? It'll get you out of bed in the morning to go to the gym. Or, you know, if you go to the gym during lunchtime, right? It'll just keep you honest. And it all makes sense, right? It's rewarding because you have a goal. You have other people supporting you. You feel bad if you don't do something. And then what's really, you know, truthful here is when you achieve your goal, you get rewarded by being more competitive for promotion, which means you're going to get paid more. You're going to be proud of yourself, right? Your performance record is going to look better. You're going to be more competitive for better jobs when you PCS next time. And if you don't follow through, you could be in big trouble, right? Like if you fail a couple times in a row, like you could be up for like administrative separation. The perversion of the whole thing is that when it comes to our personal finances, we don't do the same thing, right? We don't set up goals that we have in the future and then turn it into a daily plan to get there. We think, oh, it's beyond my control. Oh, I don't make enough money to ever have that. Oh, if I just wait a few years, like I'll get, you know, it's like making with our money, we do the what would be like sort of the fitness related thing of skipping the gym and eating a 12 pack of, you know, a dozen donuts for breakfast. That's what we do with our money, right? We skip the gym. We don't put our money to work. We don't have a plan. We don't have a routine, some daily accountability. And instead we just spend it on stupid stuff at the exchange or online, you know, and it's crazy, right? Because eventually you're going to leave the service. You're going to want to do other things. You're going to want to stop working someday. You're going to want to retire. You're going to want to be a homeowner. You're going to have a family at some point. Even if today you're like, I'm just living life, you know, full throttle, like flying inverted 100 feet off the deck, you know, like turning and burning like Mav, you know. 5-10 years from now, it's going to change. You're going to have family. You're going to have a desire to get out of the military, and you're going to need cash to do that. Maybe you just want to buy a house. Maybe you want to travel the world. You want to get a boat and get into like offshore fishing, like whatever the case is. You have things out there that are like the financial and life equivalent of like acing your fitness test so you can get, you know, a better record, better score, be more competitive for promotion. But we don't do it. And so today, you know, that's just really like what we're going to dig into. And that might be the longest intro, like soapbox ever, but we're really going to just dig into like why, right? And it's not your fault. Like that's the real inside tip here is that your failures with your personal finance, your failures to save, your failures with your budgeting, your failures to like rein in your stupid, wasteful spending, it's not your fault. The problem is with traditional budgeting and budgeting apps and the way they work and the way that they don't work, more importantly. And that's what we're going to talk about today. All right. So before we get into it, we're going to take a quick time out just to say, anybody new to the show out there in the community, hey, welcome. This is our Service and Wealth podcast. We're all about military finance and the whole range of it, right? You know, you can go back in the catalog. Now we've got, this is our 34th episode. We've explained things like the blended retirement system. We've talked about the VA loan. We've talked about how to buy a home. We've talked about, you know, the thrift savings plan. We're covering all of the angles of traditional finance and budgeting and all those different things, but we're doing it with a military focus, which is, you know, super underserved. And what we talk about every week is the building the financial education out there. So like the Military Wealth Coach and our Service and Wealth podcast becomes a resource for you to go to, a free resource. It's out there. You can just, you know, whether you subscribe to the podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, whether you sign up for our email list and get our weekly email that's got savings tips and blog posts and the latest podcast episode linked to it. All of that should be free. We hope to support this community and this brand and this business by making a little bit of money. And the way that we want to do that is we've got a book that's available on Amazon. It's also called Service and Wealth. It's the 10 things, 10 money habits that the wealthy do that helps them build and grow their wealth and keep it that the average you and me just doesn't even know about. So it's kind of like, you know, insider trading. Here, read this book and like follow these 10 tips and you'll suddenly start to create wealth and abundance in your life. And we're also going to come out with some more books that help you kind of like DIY your own retirement planning. And that, you know, we're going to turn a recent series of podcasts and blog posts on home buying for the military, real estate for the military, into a book. So you have a single resource where you can go in there and it'll just take you in, you know, just the tiniest detail from A to Z, right? Sorry, you can tell like I'm living in a different country right now because I said Z, but A to Z in everything you need to know about buying a house. And unlike a lot of other books that are out there, because there are other books that are already out there that talk about the VA loan or how to buy a house and stuff like that. The reason why we're going to publish that later in 2025 is the books are generic. The ones that are out there, they explain things that you can get for free on the internet. What they don't have is they don't have like real insight and depth of content talking about these are mistakes I made. Don't make these mistakes. Hey, these are helpful tips I've learned along the way. Do this. Ask these questions. You know, you need to, this is how you stay in control of the system, right? And it's going to be a lot of just like, really excited behind the scenes tips and like we like to say, you know, tactics, techniques, and procedures or TTPs that can help you out. I never make a plug for it, but if you go over to our website, www.militarywealthcoach.com, you know, right above the cut line, underneath the banner, you just want your literally two clicks away from scheduling a free coaching session. And you can just, you know, it works through Calendly and Google Calendar. And then the actual coaching session, you have your choice. You could say, I want to do it on Zoom or I want to do it on Google Meets or just like a voice call or whatever, where we can just talk about whatever questions, concerns, problems, goals that you have with your finances that you're just struggling with or that you want to learn more about. And so our hope is eventually as we do more and more of those, we'll start to build out some, you know, regular clients who actually want to, you know, pay for long-term subscriptions in terms of, wow, all this information you gave me is so helpful. This coaching session was great. I still feel the need to like have somebody there with me through it step by step. And so that's, you know, eventually the goal is to make enough to keep the community and the brand going that way. Now, before we switch back over into today's content, I'll just do our quick disclaimer, right? The purpose of this show is educational. It's not meant to be legal, tax, or investing advice. All investments and everything with finance has risks. So make sure you do your own research, make your own decisions, and then most importantly, accept the consequences and learn from them. And that's how we all get better. All right. So obviously, what we're talking about today is this argument, which I don't think it's an argument. I think it's just reality. It's just cold, hard reality that when at least 3 out of 4 and probably more like 9 out of 10 service members and military families are suffering and struggling financially, that it's absurd that we just take it as the reality, that we just go through it, that we don't do something about it. We'd never do that with our physical fitness. We'd never do it with our job performance. We don't do it with our marksmanship, right? We have a plan to practice that stuff and we get better and then we maintain it. All that's to say is if you're struggling with your finances right now, if you're struggling with your budgeting, if you're struggling to overcome debt, if you're not saving enough, if you're feeling hopeless or helpless about your future and your ability to have enough money to do important things, whether that's upgrade a car, get a second car so you can like grow your family, buy a house, separate from the military and have a financial cushion so that you don't have to like panic about where your next paycheck's going to come from, start a, you know, a side hustle, take over the family business, go back to college, save money for your kids to go to college, send your partner to college, retire your parents, retire, like all of these dreams, right? They, all of these things that we dream of, the only way that we can ever make our dreams come true is if we turn them into daily action plans with money, right? And so once again, it's not about the money, but the money makes everything possible. And so we want to talk today about really, as we previewed, it's not your fault if it's not working. And what I mean by that is most budgets don't work. They're like New Year's resolutions. They might be a little better because I think the average, you know, American gives up on their New Year's resolution within 15 days, right? You barely can form a good habit if you do something every day for 14 days, which means if you have, you know, a New Year's resolution of like, I'm going to go to the gym at least 3 days a week. Well, you're only going to do it 12 times in January, which means you got to stick with it for at least 2 months just to make it like somewhat of a routine. You should probably go every morning. Then you'll get it knocked, you know, nailed down. If you have a goal to go and cut back on your partying and not go out to the bars, right? You can't just skip it for the first 2 weekends in January and think you're good, right? Because that's only like 2 or 3 or 4 reps that you like didn't go tie one on and make a fool of yourself. You really need to like plan for 3 or 4 months, right? So we've got these, and when it comes to budgeting, like most budgets don't survive the first month. They usually, the habits start to break down within the first 2 weeks because you're talking about things that come out of nowhere, that come at you once in a while, right? Like, I'm not going to, you know, splurge on a new game for my PlayStation. Well, then you get the email, the marketing email, or you get the ad coming through your feed on Instagram or, you know, some other ad smartly placed in a browser. And you're like, oh my gosh, look at this new game. I've got to have it, right? You're not practicing daily good habits. It's just coming at you one at a time. That random Thursday, you know, after the staff meeting, when that, you know, the one guy on the staff who never has his stuff together and is always like a little bit disheveled and the uniform's not quite right. And lo and behold, that guy never remembers to bring his lunch and every day is going to, you know, the exchange or to Subway to buy lunch and is spending $15 a day, you know, which $75 a week, $300 a month, $3,600 a year, right? Like within a couple of years, that's like a new car, right? But just can't remember to get their stuff together and pack a lunch. Well, you packed your lunch, but they're like, hey, let's go to Subway. So-and-so's going and so-and-so's going. Are you in? Well, you don't want to feel left out. So you go with, right? And then that wasn't in your budget. Or you told yourself you weren't supposed to do it. You said you were going to skip, you know, you were no longer going to go buy lunch and just pack a lunch. And now you feel bad. Next time it happens, you're like, ugh, whatever. It's not like I can resist. I've screwed up before. You know, you just get down in these super negative, you know, cycles where you like, you're having to make a decision to like give up on something that your budget told you you couldn't have. Then you feel bad because you gave up on it. And the next time you're like, oh, I'm worthless. I had no willpower anyway. So might as well just do it again. And before you know it, you know, January's passed, you're midway through February and you're buying lunch 3 days a week. You're going out 2 nights every weekend. You know, like it just falls apart. And that's what happens. And why is that? Well, The real reason is that budgets are based on denying yourself. They're all about negativity. They're all about canceling things out. And that doesn't work. A budget should be, in order for it to work, it's got to reward you. It's got to give you personally positive feedback to get you where you want, which means it can't start by telling you the things you can't have. And that's what the traditional budget does, right? The traditional budget says, okay, how much are you spending on subscriptions? $300 a month. Okay, you need to cut out subscriptions until you're spending $150. Now you're saving $150. You're like, okay, I'm saving $150. That's great. I don't know where that money's going or what it's going to be used for. Okay, whatever. Sure, fine. How much are you spending on restaurants? $750 a month. Okay, you need to get that down to $250. You're going to give yourself $60 a week for restaurants, or $75 a week. Let's say $75 a week for restaurants. So that's one meal at a restaurant, $300 a month. Well, you've just saved $450. For what? Where's it going? What's it doing? It's just sitting now in your checking account at the end of the month, looking at you saying, think of how much fun you could have with me. So what do you do? Do you do anything useful or smart with it? Well, no, because it's not connected to anything useful or smart. That $450 has no purpose. And I feel like that's what really should resonate with us in the military, especially, is because we have a task and purpose to everything we do. Task and purpose at work. Task and purpose with our fitness. Task and purpose when we go to, you know, learn our specialty, learn our weapon systems, when we go to the field to train. Even task and purpose in the little things, like annual training. Like, you must do annual training in order to do annual training. I don't know. There's no logic behind that. I'm sorry. I thought that would be like a low-hanging fruit, like a underhand, you know, slow pitch. But actually, I cannot come up with a purpose for why at least once every 12 months I had to click through a class on tobacco cessation. Like, I quit using tobacco, and I still had to take that training. So I'm still not sure why. But I do know that when you use tobacco products, your night vision is not as good, and you're not as steady, and so it's harder to, like, look through your night vision goggles and shoot a target. So I did learn that, but then I was like, well, it doesn't matter anyway, because, like, I'm not using tobacco. Anyway, I digress. If your budget is ever going to work for you, it's got to be tied towards the things that matter to you and rewarding you by getting you the things you want. All that's to say, you know, and you should always test, like, your ideas or your concepts by coming with an extreme example. If you truly dream to die broke, and not only die broke, but you want to go out in a blaze of glory, you got no plans to live past 50, you want to die, you know, base jumping off of Everest, and you're just going to do everything radical and extreme in your power to make that fate happen, like on your 50th birthday, right? And if you survive, then it's like, you know, the universe is signed to you that you weren't quite as, you know, powerful and in control as you thought you were. But the point is, if that is truly your dream, to just spend it all, live radically, then your budget can reward you, right? It can say, you're going to need every year, you need to save $10,000 in order to take some radical, you know, surfing trip to Palau or to Nazaré in Portugal, or to, you know, go ski, climb Kilimanjaro, like whatever the case may be. And so if you know that in order to live this radical, you know, burn the candle at both ends lifestyle, you need 10 grand each year of cash to do radical things, you're going to have to save like $833 a month, or just over $400 every single payday has got to go into your, like, you know, radical living fund. And then you're going to look at your expenses and you're going to say, well, you know, if I want to do this cool stuff, I'm going to have to give up Subway for lunch. In fact, that'll probably pay for it right there. If on the other hand, you have a goal of becoming a first-time home buyer before, you're going to leave the military in 4 years. At that time, you want to be able to buy your first house back in your hometown. You know exactly the block. You know exactly the house, whatever. Let's say you need $30,000 in order to cover closing costs and down payment and a little bit of, fixing up to do. Well, $7,500 a year. So we're talking about about $600 a month in a high yield savings account. We'll get you there. Well, guess what? If you cut back on going out to restaurants every month, and if you cut back on your subscriptions, there's your $600 every month, right? Now you don't feel like you're giving things up or cutting back. Why? Because you have this goal, this really important goal, this thing that you dream of, the thing that makes you happy, the thing that helps you get up in every day, go to the gym every day, work hard every day, and you know exactly how much it's going to cost to get there. So now it doesn't feel like a sacrifice to cancel your YouTube premium and to cancel, Hulu, whatever, Hulu, Disney, ESPN, whatever it is now, Paramount, it's all one, right? It's not a problem to cancel that. It's not a problem to skip DoorDash on a Tuesday and Subway on a Thursday, because each month, that money, you would rather spend it on this big, awesome life goal. But budgets don't do that. Budgets are, they start out by telling you, you're spending too much on this and you need to cut back. You're spending too much on this, you got to cut back. Oh, and then what else are budgets really good at? At the end of the month, it tells you where you overspent, where you screwed up, right? It makes you feel bad. For a long time, I used the Mint app. Now it's Credit Karma bought the app, and so it's a Credit Karma app. But this is when it first came out 10 years ago, I was on it. And after about 3 months, at the end of the month, I would get this notification, hey, your monthly budget summary is here. And these circles would come up and they had numbers in them for where I spent money by category. And if it was pink or red, I'd gone over. And after 3 months, I just stopped looking at it because it made me feel bad. Right? I went on a date with somebody and we went to a nice restaurant and I spent $150, and that put me over my restaurant my bar tab for the month. And I had this app saying, way to go, loser. You screwed that up. I'm like, what? No, I didn't. I met someone I liked and I wanted to get to know her. So we went out. We had a good time and it was worth it. And I had the money. It came at the cost of not saving enough in my thrift savings plan to be able to afford retirement someday. But I didn't have that goal in mind. I didn't have that trade-off. And when it really comes down to it, that's why, as we said, it's not your fault if the budget's failing you. If you're failing the budget. If you're failing at budgeting, it's really the budget failing you, is the whole point of saying this, because when the entire system is made to say you can't have this or you can't spend on that or you're spending too much on this, when you stop spending that money, when you cut back on the apps, when you cut back on the restaurants, when you keep driving yourself to work, when you stay in that overpriced condo, rental, apartment, whatever, that has a nice view, you're thinking about, what am I getting by giving this up? And just having a few extra dollars in the bank account is the same as nothing. If I have $700, if I have $1,700 in my checking account at the end of the month, so what? It's not doing anything for me. It's just sitting there staring it back at me. Now, in economics, we call this opportunity cost. And I always try to keep the academics limited here, all the squishy topics and big words. But opportunity cost is a very simple concept. It says any human being is at your heart and soul, you're just a dopamine fiend. You're like a Pac-Man that goes around trying to chomp on dopamine. And so it's called the reward center in the brain. right? And so you're constantly making these decisions without really even thinking about it of what's going to get me dopamine? What's going to make me happy? Should I do this or should I do that? Should I do this or should I do that? When you make a decision and you get a reward, that's like your payoff. The thing you chose not to do also has a payoff, but you don't get it because you didn't do it, right? And that payoff is also called in economics the opportunity cost. It's the value of that most important thing that you didn't do by doing the thing you did. And so if I have $750 that I'm spending on, you know, beer in restaurants and takeaway food every month, I'm getting $750 worth of good food and good times. If I suddenly tell myself I'm only going to allow $300 a month for that, and that $450 I'm saving is just going to my checking account, at the end of the month, I'm going to look back and I'm going to say, what payoff did I get? I have $450 in my checking account. What was the opportunity cost? What was the payoff I didn't get? Well, I missed going out for this person's birthday. I said no when my friends went and did like a cookout at the beach last Sunday. I skipped going to lunch that one day. And you're just going to start adding up all of these things that you gave up, all the fun you gave up, which is a huge opportunity cost because you want to have fun. Your brain wants a dopamine. And so then it fails. The budget fails. The next month, you're right back on it, and you're spending $750 a month again. To solve this is really simple, right? You just have to come up with a goal that means a lot to you. From our early example, if I need to save, you know, by saving $450 a month this year, what's that? That's a little over $5,000. Let's say that's enough for me to, instead of going home and like hanging out at, you know, my cousin's house, listening to everybody talk about high school, that would be enough money for me to take a snowboarding trip to Japan, right? So I need that cash for a snowboarding trip to Japan over basket leave during December or January, whatever. At the end of the month, when I'm looking at that $450 in my checking account, I'm not going to be thinking about, oh, I didn't go to the, you know, cookout at the beach with, you know, all the gang from the unit, or I skipped going to lunch to Subway with my friends every Thursday. You're going to be looking at that. You're saying, yes, I am that much closer. I'm like 10% of the way to my dream snowboarding trip to Niseko, right? And after the next month, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm 20% of the way there. I can legitimately think about booking my airfare or like getting, you know, some lodging arranged, like an Airbnb. 2 months after that, you're like, I'm pulling the trigger. I've already saved $2,000, right? And you're not even thinking about the fun you gave up because your brain is focused on this reward center of, I really wanted to save up for this snowboarding trip, and I'm doing it, and I'm almost halfway there. I've got the airfare already booked. Look at me go, right? And you flip the switch, right? And that's just because that's how the brain works. You know, the brain is a simple, like to call it the monkey brain, you know? It's going to look at trade-offs, and it's going to choose the one that makes it happy. And unfortunately, when it comes to personal finances and family finances, the choice that's easy and makes us happiest right now is usually the one that wins. And then 5 years go by and you're like, now you're married and you got a baby and you're like, I'll never get away from my responsibilities now. I'll never go to Japan and go ski, you know, snowboard the Japao and like have that dream trip. And then another 5 years goes by and another 5 years and you're still either living in base housing or you're renting, you don't have any savings, you got credit card debt, no cash, no home ownership, no assets. You're behind in your retirement savings goals. the time just gets away. So, of course, budgets fail because they don't motivate us and they don't reward us to go after the things we want. They just tell us the things we can't have. And then they remind us of how we screwed up. Now, there's a few other things that are, you know, make it even more challenging. And, you know, kind of tied to it. And this is sort of a pet peeve. And this is something that I did in my 20s. And I'll just give you this example without too much detail. But out of college, I went straight to grad school. And then during my first year of a two-year program, there was an internship opportunity where I could keep working on my thesis research because it was sponsored by a bank in New York, an investment bank. And it just involved thousands of Excel spreadsheets. Not the most fun thesis, right? But if you want to get like financial coaching from somebody, you would want it from somebody who thinks thousands of Excel spreadsheets are fun, right? Just saying. But you know, like I got this internship. They were like, hey, you're hired. We changed the whole arrangement where I just stayed in New York and I kept working for them while I finished the research and I was getting paid. And then as soon as I got my master's, they hired me on, you know, as a full-time and a higher salary. And as soon as I did that, I thought, this is radical. I'm making a lot of money. I want to live this like cool city life that I had imagined. So I got this top floor corner apartment in Brooklyn. This is like 25 years ago, almost over 20 years ago, at least. It's funny to say. So just for my own psychology, we'll say like 20 years ago, the rent on that, it was a one-bedroom apartment, was $3,000 a month. Now, mind you, I had another $1,500 a month. Not quite that much. Probably like $1,300 or $1,400 in student loan payments because I financed all my school and all my grad school. And I had like a $600 a month truck payment. So I already had like $2,000 worth of debt that I was paying every month. And I thought, yes, I deserve, and I get this apartment, and it was $3,000 a month. And at the end of every month, my savings was going down, and I had money on my credit card. And I was like, but I'm making all this money as a banker, you know, brand new associate banker. How am I broke? Well, it was a simple decision, right? I thought I deserved this kind of housing. I thought, like, this was the place that I should have for my job and my income and all that stuff, but I couldn't afford it, right? And just as we just covered that budgets fail because they don't access that part of our brain that wants to be happy and feel good about ourselves, and instead they just make us feel bad, so we go back to doing the bad money habits that make us feel good, like spending too much on subscriptions and spontaneous online shopping and dining out and booze and bars and all that stuff. Well, when it comes to budgets, we also have really unrealistic expectations, right? We have this sense of entitlement, like I deserve this and I should get this. And that's another reason why we fail with our personal finances and budgets don't help us, because we feel like there's a sacred cow in our monthly expenditures. And that's usually the housing and the transportation piece. Now the average, right? So we mentioned recently on the podcast, the rule of 30, which says that when you're budgeting to either rent a place or to buy a home, 30% of your pre-tax income should be the maximum you spend on housing. And yet, in America, the average homeowners, right, in 2024, the average homeowner is spending about 35% of their income on housing, and the average renter is spending about 43%. On housing, which means on average, Americans are blowing their budget on housing. Now, if you're talking about spending $300 a month on subscriptions versus $150 a month on subscriptions, compared to you're spending $2,000 on rent and you're spending 43% of your salary, that means you're one third over. That means instead of $2,000 in rent, you should be spending $1,500 in rent to follow the rule of 30. You could be saving $500, right? Like that $500 can solve a lot of your savings goals. And it can do it over three times faster than giving up on Hulu and YouTube Premium, right? And so that's, we have this other problem with budgets in that they try to attack and nitpick the small things. And we feel like the big things where we can save the most and have the biggest impact on our financial future and our financial present are sacred cows. Like we can't touch them. Oh, I can't just move. I've got a partner and I've got two kids. I need a 4-bedroom house so each of my kids can have their own bedroom. What? No. Get them bunk beds. All right. No child is entitled. It's only been in the last like one or two generations, essentially like millennials and like Gen Zers brought up thinking like from the age of six, we deserve our own big room and our own playrooms. It's insane. Your kid doesn't deserve it. Give them the small room. If they've got a sibling, they can share it. And you know what's going to happen is you're going to save several hundred dollars a month on your housing. The same goes with autos, right? And transportation is, for some reason, you know, Americans are spending on average about 17 to 18% of their income on transportation. Now that's car payments, that's gas, that's maintenance, that's all those other things. If you have, and the average car payment in 2024, that average car payment was $700. So the average new car payment was $810. The average used car was $620. It works out to just about $700 per vehicle as a monthly car payment. Is that not insane? Like, why are we worrying about not going out to, you know, going out to the bars with our friends on a Friday so we can save $50 a week when we're going out and we're financing a $50,000 car and spending $700 a month giving it to the bank, right? Take your enlistment bonus, take your career starter loan, take whatever accession incentive that you've got. Like pretty much everyone who enlists in the military these days is getting some sort of sign-up bonus. Everybody who re-enlists is getting a sign-up bonus or a re-enlistment bonus. Under the blended retirement system, you get continuation pay. You can get other incentives. There's all these like cash incentives now with military service that allows you to just go pay like $10,000 or $12,000 for a reliable used car cash. And now you're going to save yourself $700 a month on an auto loan. That's $8,400 a year. That would be enough. You could literally buy a beater $8,000 car cash, drive it for 2 years until it falls apart, and you're going to have, from what you've saved by not having an auto loan, you're going to have, if you put in a high-yield savings account earning 4 or 5%, you're going to have 20 grand after 2 years just from what you didn't spend on the auto loan. So for as toxic as budgets are because they focus on negativity and denial and they prevent us from rewarding ourselves or tying our savings now into big rewards that make us feel good about ourselves, they're also just sort of like embed these unrealistic expectations. Like, I deserve to have this. I live in this. I can't live in a smaller place. I can't drive a used car. I don't want to. But those are where the biggest changes for your personal finances can be unlocked. And what I will say is, you know, for my wife and I, the first half of our marriage, I guess that we can kind of, it's convenient that financially it kind of works out that way, chronologically and financially. The first half of our marriage, you know, we used the Mint budgeting app or I forget the other one. She had a different one. It's not important. But we, you know, essentially like we were just doing the middle class American thing. We had a house that was, the mortgage was more than the BAH. We had two car payments. You know, we regularly splurged on things. There were, you know, multiple restaurant meals and stuff every week. And we had our budget apps and we tracked it and we looked at it. And we started to make cuts and we started to like cook meals at home and pack our lunches and not go out as much. And we were canceling subscriptions. You know, like I still remember, like, it's still drama to this day, is I canceled Spotify to save $14 a month, you know? And like every once in a while I'll come up and be like, don't you remember that time you made me cancel? We had to cancel Spotify and now we have to listen to like ads and we can't make our playlists. Like, do you remember that? Like, that was so stupid for $14. Because we still had the two car payments. We still had debt. And we still had we were still paying a massive mortgage because we bought a house that was just more than we could afford. It was more than the rule of 30. Then halfway through our marriage, we were like, this is not working. We need to fix it. So we downsized our housing. We sold the cars that had payments. And then we had enough money to just pay cash. We got two cars, each one like $8,000, right? And, you know, it was at this time that I discovered Bigger Pockets. And I want to thank the founder, Beardy Brandon, because, you know, he was quoted once as saying, like, all you need for a car is $8,000. Anything over and above that is ego. You're just paying for ego when you go above that. And it changed our lives, right? We got rid of, I think it was at the time, it was about $1,200 a month in car payments, which is about $15,000 a year. And when we downsized our housing from within our BAH, we created another, it was about $800 worth of savings, which is close to it's $9,600. So basically by just killing those sacred cows of like middle-class entitlement and putting it back open into how we could fix our personal finances, we carved out $24,000 a year in savings just from those two decisions. And then we didn't even care that we went back and we got, you know, Spotify Premium again. Who cares? That's only $150 a year. We're saving $24,000 by setting realistic expectations and understanding where our money went and where we could make the biggest impact. You know, and then you turn those savings into investments in assets. You go out and buy rental real estate. Buy, you know, other assets like stocks or bonds, et cetera. And you increase your income, right? So not only now you get this snowball effect where we were able to still have a nice place to live. We still had our transportation. We still got to do everything we wanted. We had fun on the daily and the weekly and the monthly and the yearly with still spending money like that. But we had massive savings that quickly added up, allowed us to achieve other goals. And then those other goals started increasing our income. So now we had lower expenses and higher income. And it was snowballing. You know, the first year you saved $24,000. The next year saving over $40,000. The next year, you know, almost double that. And like it just keeps going and going and going. And so when it comes back to it, the key to winning that battle, the key towards, you know, getting the financial equivalent of a 300 on your fitness test is come up with some realistic expectations and then adopt a financial system for yourself that rewards success and doesn't punish you for making a mistake, because we're all human and we all make mistakes. You know, I haven't used, you know, the budgeting app in, I guess, yeah, in like almost 5 years. You know, what we did is we switched over to an expense tracker, in which instead of allowing the app to just in the background crawl through our different accounts and like do all of that automation, right? You think automation is great because your budgeting app is tracking your expenses and like giving you reports. That's not real automation. That's just lazy bookkeeping. Real automation is if your budgeting app could, every time you got a paycheck deposited in your account, automatically pay your bills and automatically put money into your savings and investment accounts and then give you a spending allowance, right? Like that's automation. And so that's what, you know, essentially that's what we did is we got rid of the budgeting apps. We created our own expense tracker in Google Sheets in which we had to manually enter every expense. What does that do? It puts you back in control of your spending because you're about to spend $95 on, you know, some sort of like gadget or clothing item or cosmetic that came up in your feed on Instagram. You're like, oh, I don't want to have to enter that and admit to myself, I just spontaneously bought that, or have my partner see it in the tracker that I was spending money on this. So you don't do it. And then instead of using the app to connect to our accounts and like automatically track our spending, we logged into all our accounts and we automated where the money moved to. And we automated giving ourselves an allowance. So essentially, you know, you just flip the whole thing on its head. A budgeting app will say, you got paid $8,000 this month. You know, you and your partner together, you made $8,000 this month. You spent $2,000 on rent, $1,000 on groceries, $500 on subscriptions, $500 on restaurants, you know, $800 on car payments, $200 on insurance, da-da-da, goes down the list. And then at the end, it's like, you spent $7,982. You're like, wow, we stayed under budget. We have $18 left. Oh, shoot, we didn't save anything, right? But you flip it on its head and you automate everything, and that $8,000 paychecks get deposited, and then automatically the rent's paid, or the mortgage is paid, the insurance is paid, the deposit into your future home savings fund is paid, the deposit into your thrift savings plan or your IRA is paid. And then when it's all done, you get $500 deposited into your checking account. And it's, you know, the third of the month, you look in there, you're like, oh, I got $500. Now I have a total of $700 in here. Sweet. I can spend that however I want for this month, so long as I don't go to zero. Or I can go to zero, just don't go beyond zero, right? But this is guilt-free spending. And I don't feel bad if I want to like go have lunch with my friends or go have beers after work with my coworkers. Like, I don't feel bad because I have $700 that I get after I know every other thing else. And I got to say, like, making that transition and getting rid of the budgeting app that told us what we can do and then made us feel guilty if we did it, we have guilt-free spending. We're on track for all of our goals, and we get to see the monthly rewards, you know, each time that we reach one. And so, you know, that's sort of like our opening salvo here against what's wrong with personal finance in America and how budgeting apps make it worse, why they make it easier to fail. You know, and part of it, obviously part of it is on each of us, and part of it's on you to adjust your expectations and what you're entitled to versus what you can afford and try to like fix that. But for the most part, it's just coming up with a better system. Now we're going to come back this month. We're going to have a few more episodes, and we're going to really introduce and talk about is our iCash system. iCash is, it's how you turn the system on its head, and you start with the positive. You start with rewards. You start with personal things. It's, the I is identify goals and dreams, right? It's not like track your spending, spend less on subscriptions, carpool, don't go to Chipotle, right? It's literally like start by identifying your dreams and goals and how much you need to save to reach those, and then living guilt-free so long as you're putting money towards those important things in your life. And we'll get more into that, and we're going to pair it up with the blog and make sure that we're sharing the useful TTPs and like the tricks and the tips and the insights that help make it work instead of just, you know, being generic. And so we hope that you'll tune in again next week when we introduce iCash and talk a little bit more about how it works and why it works, and get into the first steps. And we're really going to focus on like building a case study through the blog and then kind of talking about it on the podcast a little bit, because it's useful to like look at numbers instead of just having to hear somebody talk about them. So we'll put those things out each week, like one step at a time, crawl, walk, run, to help you, you know, break out from budgeting failures, which are just naturally going to happen if you're using traditional budgeting techniques and apps, and help you take back control of your finances and start making real, real progress towards affording your major goals and that future dream life that you want to live and that you know, is it inspires you to get up every morning, go to work, put on the uniform to earn that paycheck. But without a good system, you're never actually getting any closer towards it. Thanks again for tuning in. Once again, wherever you're listening, whether it's Spotify or Apple Podcasts, you know, make sure you subscribe, leave us a 5-star review, and then most importantly, find one person this week who you think would benefit and find this episode useful, or maybe there's an older episode that you really like and you'd like, you've met somebody and you were reminded like, oh, this person's like right now, they're like wondering, how do I get into home buying? And on the Service and Wealth podcast with the Military Wealth Coach, there was a whole series, 7-part series on, I'm going to send them a link to that, and just find one person within our military family who would benefit from a better financial education and more knowledge to take control of their finances and fix things and grow the community. So, all right. Thanks again for tuning in. That's all for us. We're signing off, and until next week, stay financially fit and mission ready.